extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer on this beautiful Monday. Matt Doyle, Kalen Carr, no David Goss. He is living the dream. He is in Portugal right now, eating food, going to the beach, seeing the sights, and of course going to a soccer game that holds like 5,000 people and just loving life. Before we get into all the news from MLS Week 32, Revs win the Supporters Shield without playing a game. Sporting Kansas City and Seattle Sounders, controversy. Just a little bit of it. You can watch instant replay, or maybe we'll talk about the suplex here in just a little bit. And of course, playoff relevant results all throughout the league, including the Red Bulls, now the hottest team in Major League Soccer, somehow, some way, up into the playoff field. Here's the big question to start the show. If you could, right now, jump on a plane, go somewhere, anywhere in the world for a soccer vacation a la David Goss. I know he's there with his girlfriend. I know they're doing other things, but I also know David, which means they'll go to like 4 or 5 games. Where are you going? Kalen, what flight are you getting on it? You've already been to Portugal this year, so you can just cross that one right off your list.
Yeah. Well, I'm here in the Bay Area, and I saw Wanda yesterday, actually, which was cool.
Oh.
One of our club teammates, Noah Merle, former Earthquake and Sounder, he went to the High School Hall of Fame. We're all club teammates, so we got the whole club team back together. So that was pretty fun. But I would have to say, I know you're supposed to go somewhere exotic, and David Goss is on a beach and doing all this beautiful stuff. I want to go to Foxborough. I feel like that's going to be the place for me. It's been a long time.
What?
I've spent a lot of my sort of like 20s in that area. And on Twitter recently, I never tweet, but I did tweet about going back to the Best Western at Braintree and giving it another go.
You want to hit Bar Louie for some happy hour?
Well, I was kind of like doing it tongue in cheek, but
Patriots,
I had some fans.
Patriots Place TID.
Yeah, they wrote back and they were saying there's an elite food court there. Two GameStops, the best lids ever, and a rotating CD pop culture store on the first floor called Hot Topic, and that was by a Revs fan. Bug type gym leader? No, Yaman Stude. Yeah.
I don't know what's going on right now.
Anyways, yeah. So
I have no idea what's happening.
If they do go, like, if somewhere in the playoffs, I actually do want to go there and experience it again. And maybe Charlie Davies will take us out, too.
For Kalen, that's outside the U.S., apparently.
It is, to me.
I don't think anything north of New York. Did you specify outside the U.S., Weeby?
Did I? I might not have.
Kalen makes a good point, though. Anything north of New York. I mean, like, Foxborough is not my ideal vacation spot, but Providence is dope. And it's really close to Providence, which is like one of my favorite cities in the U.S. And of course, like the fried calamari, like Rhode Island style fried calamari is the friggin' best thing in the world. I would probably pick Providence, and then you get up to a Revs game. That's my dream soccer vacation.
Oh my God. Everybody out there is groaning. Tell me where you would go, please. Give me something better than Providence and Foxborough. No offense to Foxborough. I've had some wonderful evenings in and around that stadium. I'm going to throw out, I'm going to Mexico. I'm going to DFA. I'm going to Mexico City. My bachelor party that was supposed to happen, I don't know if you guys would have been able to go, but
among the
soccer folks, it never went out because the pandemic arrived. So we were supposed to go to Mexico City. We were supposed to, you know, eat our weight in street tacos and go to as many games as possible. That is still what I would do. I would go see Liga MX games and hopefully maybe get some CCL in as well. Let us know what you would do. Let us know where you want MLS Cup to be. Just from a like travel perspective, I don't know if I would choose Foxborough, but Charlie Davies has promised me a good time in Boston at the Quinn House, if it indeed happens, so I'm on that tip. On today's show, we're going to celebrate the Revs, of course, Seattle SKC. I said it. Also, Savages in Canada. Jonathan Osorio, Josie Altidore, Breaking Hearts in Quebec, and more coming as well. Instant replay, I mentioned that. You should go check it out. There was a play that many were very emotionally invested in that I think the call was pretty obvious, and we'll talk about that in a second, but go check it out. And then, Doyle, your column is always a must-read on Mondays. I just read that myself. Shout-out to the winner of our Extra Time Fantasy League, Glass Half Awful. Pretty good. Captain Gonzalo Higuain against FC Cincinnati. Pretty smart. 42 points on that in the double game week on their way to putting up 140 total points. So congratulations to Glass Half Awful. And congratulations to the Revs, as I said, who didn't even have to play to win the Supporters' Shield. Sounders didn't win. They lost to Sporting Kansas City at home. That sealed the deal. Seattle cannot catch them at this point, and nobody can. The Revs are on 70 points with two games left. The record, as we've said over and over and over and over from 2019, LAFC, is 72 points. They have Inter Miami at home on the final day of the season. They also have Colorado Rapids coming up. So I think the Revs are going to break the record, but they have the Shield. They'll celebrate it against Inter Miami. They roared back against Orlando. They put on the starters at the end and absolutely pummeled them, Doyle. Adam Buxton now in 16 goals, not a single one of them PKs. He's one behind Ola Kamara in the Golden Boot race. What did this result mean? What does this Shield mean to the Revs? We've sort of talked about it in, you know, hypotheticals, knowing that the hypothetical would come true. Now we're here.
Yeah, I mean, the 10,000-foot view for me is that the Shield is the best trophy to win. It is the best representation of who the best team in the league is in any given year. It's just a much harder thing to do is to go out there week after week after week for 7-8 months, grind through results, come back from 2-0 down on the road at a playoff team, pick up a point. Like, these types of results are just, to me, a better indication of who the best team is than just getting hot for a month. And we saw that last year with that Crew team, right? The Crew were a pretty good team, and then they got hot for a month. They won MLS Cup. They come back this year, and now they're missing the playoffs. So I respect teams that are able to do this so much. And maybe that, I mean, in part is because I was a fan from day one of MLS, and I sat through some truly awful Metro Stars games where the players weren't showing up. And the games were miserable to watch. And in part because of this weekly column I write, like, I probably watched 75% of every MLS game. And you can see the difference in terms of the effort and the execution and the focus and what the Revs have done, what Philly did last year, LAFC, Toronto, the Red Bulls, and Atlanta United, frankly, even though Atlanta didn't win the Shield in 2018, they came so close. It's a different mindset. It's a different mentality than basically anything else you see in the league. And I just respect the hell out of it. And they are the best team in the league. And for Revs fans, a lot of that Revs fan base has been around since 1996. They've had some great teams, made a lot of MLS Cups, came close to the Shield a number of times. This is their first MLS trophy. This is the first time the team has won something in MLS.
Yeah.
And like, you look at the tweet the Revs put out. You could see it in the responses to that, how much it meant to that fan base to have the team that went out there and did this. And so, I mean, it codifies what we've been seeing all year, which is that the Revs are, you know, the best team in the league. And now they have a chance to over the next two games, to write their name into the record books as, you know, the best regular season team of all time. And then after that, the truly elite teams in MLS history get to write their name in the record books by winning both the Shield and MLS Cup. And I know that that is what Bruce Arena wants more than anything else. If they do that, then we're probably talking about the Revs as the best MLS team in league history. And what they showed in the final 25 minutes in Orlando, once they put on Heel, Buxa, Bo, Buchanan, and DeJuan Jones, and they just blew Orlando City's doors in, like, that, it's hard to deny what we saw on the field, that, like, that is what they've been doing all year.
I just want to put in perspective, you mentioned the Revs' history here, and we know about all the disappointments in MLS Cup and these sort of almost moments. Well, those are really the only almost in a lot of way. They have a U.S. Open Cup, and they have a Superliga. And we've talked a lot about Bruce Arena sort of being like poo-pooing the Shield. And we knew he would do that. It's Bruce. We know what he cares about. It's MLS Cup. But there's probably a reason why that is what he cares about. This is the Revs Trophy Hall, too. One of them a defunct trophy now, and one of them the Open Cup, which we know and love. But Bruce Arena has won five MLS Cups in comparison. Just Bruce. three, soon now four, supporter shields. He has an Open Cup, a CONCACAF Champions Cup, and an Inter-American Cup. That's one manager versus the Revs as a club. Like, tells you why they went out and got Bruce Arena. These trophies, these sort of accomplishments, this sort of consistent success, the expectation that you would have this sort of consistent success. That's why you go get Bruce Arena. So that explains to me why New England would be, and their fans would be, so excited about this moment, about being able to watch a team from minute one to, you know, two more games, so 180 minutes to go, of just sustained excellence in a regular season, but then also believe that they're going to do something they've never done before, which is go make the run at MLS Cup. And look, Supporters Shield winners don't often do it. It's very, very rare. But I do think that this Revs team has what it takes to do it, and I think that this game proved it, Kalen. Like, sort of the resilience, but also just the talent level and the mentality to say, okay, well, this game might not actually matter. We're already Shield winners. But the only thing we care about is winning. And even if it's going to be a game that a lot of people say is not that important to us, we are going to do everything we can to win it. And in MLS Cup, those moments, those comebacks, those thin margins in the playoffs, that's what will get them through. And look, Sporting Kansas City and Sounders fans would tell you that the East is weak anyway, so the Revs are just going to coast.
No, I think it is, you know, this weekend was a good sort of reflection of their mentality that they've had throughout the season. Because to Doyle's point, when you watch the games, and there were just ones where even, you know, back in early summer where it would be kind of like a tough time of year, and the Revs would always kind of find that extra gear where they would kind of really either push to win the game or see out a game or kind of like even games where they were down behind, they were able to come back and get results out of. So I agree that I think the Shield is by far the hardest of the trophies to win. Doyle and I will fight till the end of time on this, because I don't think this gets, and I don't want to speak for the Revs fans, but I don't think this gets the monkey off their back. I don't think that this sort of lets down that kind of, that feeling of pain and suffering from losing those MLS Cups in the past. And while I think it's the hardest trophy, I don't think it's the best trophy still. I think I still think MLS Cup, as far as I know it, has been the best trophy in MLS. It's the one that everybody covets at the beginning of the year and wants to go out and get. So I would still put this Revs team in an almost category. I think that they, and then when you get around ideas around the best team of all time, I still have some trouble not putting LA Galaxy, some of those LA Galaxy teams, some of those DC United teams in the early days, or others, Atlanta United even, above maybe where we've seen the Revs go so far, just as far as some of the high-end quality. But as a team goes, I think they're getting closer and putting themselves closer to that conversation. No chance at all, if they don't win MLS Cup. That's just an obvious statement, but they've put themselves in a real big position to prime for the playoffs. And I think even this result on the end was important, just in the sense that they may have to play against Orlando in the playoffs. And yes, this was in Orlando. That would be in Foxborough instead. But you never want to give a team any confidence against you to say, oh, well, we just beat the Revs and now we can go in the playoffs and maybe get a result. You want to kind of continue to break these teams' backs psychologically going into the playoffs. So it was a big result, and congrats to the Revs.
Doyle, I just want to get this out of the way now, so don't roll your eyes or groan when I read this email. Adam in Kansas City, I want to put this to bed. Is it really fair to say that the Revs are hands down the best team in the league? It feels like everyone has just given that title to them. In an unbalanced league like MLS, Supporters Shield winners aren't always the best team. Their only non-conference game was a 2-1 loss to Dallas. The East also seems to be much weaker with only the Revs as cup contenders. In the West, it's Seattle and Sporting at the top with teams like Colorado and Portland with a chance to make it to a final. Is this just a case of my own Western Conference bias?
Yes.
Yeah.
I agree too. I think if you're watching the Revs play, the consistent standard of quality that they've held throughout the season has been the best.
And by the way, if there's a team with 70 points in one conference where everybody's playing each other all the time, it goes to figure that there are going to be less points to go around for the other teams.
Also,
and when a team like Nashville draws 15 games, that's the way it, like, however many games they've played,
16.
That's points that doesn't go around as well.
How is Philadelphia not
an MLS Cup contender, by the way. They won the Shield last year. They made it to the CONCACAF Champions League semifinals. They're on 49 points. Most teams that we've seen make it to the CONCACAF Champions League semifinals then flame out during the regular season. Philly's gone in the opposite direction. Revs have owned Philly this year. Nashville, as you pointed out, one of the toughest teams in the league to beat. Like, that's an Eastern Conference team. You know, like, this Orlando City team is really, really good, has a lot of talent. The Revs smoked them in the final 30 minutes. That question was loaded with Western Conference bias.
Yes, it was. Portland have lost three straight games. Just going to throw it out there.
I thought they were 0-2-1.
They've lost three straight.
They've
lost three straight.
That's my bad.
Yeah, they've lost three straight. Colorado Rapids have three wins in their last 10. I'm not discounting the Colorado Rapids. I'm just saying that this idea that there are this like bevy of juggernauts in the Western Conference is false. Sounders fans haven't won in three games. You lost to the Dynamo. Like, you just lost at home to Sporting Kansas City, and I know we're gonna argue about this and talk about the call and all that. But a Sporting Kansas City team without Pulido and without Shawi, I know you're missing players on your own, but missing those players takes the ceiling down. You know, without Ladero and Rui Diaz, right, the ceiling goes down. Like, I just think it's completely unfair to try to, like, what about the Revs' success this year when they have 70 points? It only matters what you do in the games that you play. Like, that's it. We don't have the big sample size of East versus West. And I'm with Dave Clark in the sense that he asked, does the East versus West discourse even matter? I don't think it does. I don't think it does. I think, actually, this year, the way that the seeding is going to be in each conference is actually really accurate, because it's almost predominantly you're playing teams in your conference. Where you sit in your conference is a pretty good accurate representation of where you are and your talent level and your ability to perform week in, week out. So I don't think the discourse matters. If you want the discourse to matter, get the MLS Cup against the Revs. The Revs still got to get there too. Everybody does. So we'll get to that point and find out. Let's talk about Buxa. Let's talk about the Revs. Let's talk about the response, because they were down 2-0. Nani gets the header, skids it by Matt Turner. DK, among four, grabs the ball and scores the PK. They're up 2-0. It's feeling like Orlando's like, yeah, we're doing this. We're going. It's ours. We're going to win this game at home. We're going to solidify our position in the Eastern Conference. We're going to pass Nashville. We're going to pass Philadelphia. They could have been even with those teams in this game, and on tiebreakers, I think they would have been ahead. They weren't.
Third.
Because Adam Buxa came on. Because Heal came on. Because DeJuan Jones came on. I mean, it was an absolute... It just got switched on its head.
Yeah.
And there was only one question, which was, are the Revs going to win this game?
Yeah. But I mean, for a while, it looked like the question was, can Orlando City hang on? And they were hanging on for dear life, as Oscar Pereja said down the stretch. And that is, like, look, Orlando City are not yet playing at the level that I think they can hit, and maybe they won't ever be able to play at that level. Maybe that is just a fond memory of the 2020 MLS's back tournament, when I thought they played some of the best soccer in the league. And, like, even though they're talented and even though they're in the mix in this Eastern Conference, they're just not using the ball and exerting control through the midfield like they did last summer. I still think that team is in there. But even if that team was in there, I'm not sure it would have mattered over the final 25 minutes, because, again, this is just a case of the Revs getting their best players back out on the field and finding a gear that another team, like, the other team just didn't have. And in this particular instance, it was Buxa who has developed, like, massively over the past 18 months since coming to the Revs, just being a monster in the box. Like, that first goal, his run was timed to perfection, and obviously perfect touch on the finish. That second goal reminded me of like prime Kai Kamara, where it's just like you put the ball in that area and you know that there is only one guy who's going to be up there able to get it, and Buxa just dunked on, I think it was Rodrigo Schlegel, just dunked on him in 2-2, and like that, like, it was
you remember, like, going back to, I think, the last time these two teams played, it was in Foxborough, and I think Buxa came on in that one as well, or I think, I can't remember if he came on or started that one, But there's a play in that one too where him and Schlegel are banging in the box where there's the ball goes wide, and they make like you basically just shoulder charging each other like hardcore, and the ball gets whipped in, and I think it ends up going off Schlegel and going in for an own goal. But it was a little bit of those two have been going at it all season, and Buksa has been winning. I think that sort of physicality was not something you would describe from Buksa earlier on, and in the past he had seemed pretty content to stay outside or drift wide with his runs, and his presence in the box has really, really changed, I think, you know, this Revs team, and then also even when you watch him play with his national team.
And the other thing, I think it was more Zlatan-esque, like in the way that they were playing to him down the stretch. You know, look, the Galaxy didn't have the interchange, they didn't have the talent around Zlatan that this Revs team has around Buksa, obviously so. But it felt to me like we're going to get the ball in that sort of early crossing zone, whipped in ball, whatever it might be, and we're just going to trust that Buksa is going to be the man amongst boys in there.
Yeah.
And he absolutely was. Where it was just like, hey, if you put this in an area where he can get his head on it, he is the only one that's going to do so. And his efficiency of finishing in that position this year, and we just saw it midweek last week with Tommy McNamara whipping it in. He is going to get there, and he's going to be pinpoint with. He has 16 goals. None of them are PKs. Not I one. Mean, Mike, a Revs fan in Arlington, hit us up and is asking about the complimentary nature between him and Bo now, because that was a big question for the first half of the year, and it doesn't feel like a question anymore.
Now there's the little roll back heel goal I think it was on midweek last week. Like once you start seeing those two connecting, that's trouble for the rest of the league. And then the other thing is DeJuan Jones serves in a good ball there too. I think he came on in this one, or did he start?
He came on in about the 65th minute. Yeah.
And so
the thing with the Revs that we saw last year in the playoffs when they lost to the Crew was, can you play Buksa and Bo together against a team that, you know, kind of swamps central midfield? Is it possible to maybe give up control of the game through central midfield? Is it worth doing that just to get both these guys on the team together? The two big questions sort of inherent to that were, can Buksa be good enough in the box? Can he find those chances and finish those chances? And he has answered that in the affirmative. As Weeby said, he leads the league in non-penalty goals. That's one. And two is, over the past month and a half, Gustavo Bo has become a different kind of player. Like Gustavo Bo, you know, prior to this last 6-week stretch, was just shoot on sight. That's like, if he got the ball 30 yards and in, he was going to do everything in his power to get a shot off. There is value in that. There is more value in being the type of guy who will make the right pass, who will try to combine a little bit, who will recognize the attacking opportunity presented to him and work to get an even better shot than the 24 yarder with three guys in front of him. That is a different version of Gustavo Bo, one that I would not have bet money on that version being in there. And then, you know, in addition to that, and Weeby, you talked about this in the pre-show, he's in there tracking back. He's in there being a defensive presence.
Not just tracking back, winning almost every 50-50 ball in that last 20 minutes when they had to have it.
Yeah. I mean,
making selfless runs, combining with DeJuan Jones, doing things, as you said, that we just weren't really accustomed to seeing Gustavo Bo do, but also goal scoring this year. I think he's at 9 assists too. He's at like 14-9. Buks is at 16-3. Yeah, Carly Seale got another assist on this night. They're doing it again. And you talked about Kalen. Okay, midsummer, how'd they do it? Well, this is a team that did it without the MVP of the league in Carly Seale, because Tejan Buchanan took a huge step up. Well, now Tejan's not that Tejan for this time. And Arena has said between him and Matt Turner, sort of a little bit of a hangover from everything that they have on their plate with international play and otherwise. But then that just speaks to the construction of the team, the ability to do it different ways. It's not all just through one player, as it sort of is with Minnesota United at times and others, where you have this talisman and they've got to be on the field, otherwise, well, it's just not there for us. Like, they don't have the best defense in the league, but they have a very effective one, and they've had guys that have cycled in and out. They have a game changer in the goal, and then they have this squad that Bruce Arena knew he didn't even have to start, that just came on and said, actually, this is our game. We're going to take this game. And we have the belief, the culture, the wherewithal, the history and belief in each other to know that's the way it's going to go down. It's incredibly impressive. We'll just see if in a single elimination format it holds up. But that's a question for all of the great teams. Every single, the Red Bulls, for instance, when they pipped Atlanta United to that record. LAFC, of course. I mean, Toronto FC is really the only one that went out and sort of backed it up and did it, right? And these recent history-making teams and won MLS Cup. We'll see if they can do it. Bruce has joked about the break. How much do you think that break is going to affect the Revs? And we'll get to Philly and Nashville here in a second and talk about maybe who the biggest competition is. How much do you think that affects the Revs, this long break that they will be on between the international break and then the bye that they have? I saw some folks out there, and this is a constant sort of refrain at this time of year, like, the bye doesn't actually help them. They need momentum. What do you think about that, Kalen?
I think for a team like this, it will help them. I think for the teams that are maybe surging like Red Bull, the break will not help them. I think those are the types of teams that want to just continue to play games and want these teams that are maybe like the Revs to get tired out and not have and just to kind of wear them down. But I think for the Revs, and it kind of goes to the point of saying, all right, well, what's going on with Tejan right now? What's going on with Matt Turner? Are those guys feeling okay? And I think, yeah, like you mentioned, Bruce mentioned just all the matches they've played, national team matches. That takes a lot out of you, not just physically, but I think also emotionally. You put a lot into it. Transfer rumors, transferring, flying to Belgium, coming back. That's a lot for a player, especially a lot for it to happen just in 1 year. You probably feel like he's lived a couple years. And so I think for those guys, like, you know, now it's not so much of a break either in that sense as well. But same thing, like just getting a little bit more time for this team, I think, to hit reset before the playoffs and you say, okay. And the other good thing, I think, also is that they've won the Shield not on the last day. Because you mentioned the Red Bull, they were getting pushed to the line with Atlanta United. And I think same with Philly, when you look at what they did last year, going right to the last day. That takes a lot to then turn around and flip and go straight into it. And when we've seen Supporter Shield winners crash, it's often been, wow, the high of the Supporter Shield on the final day of the decision day or whatever it might be, or close to the end, and then it's, we got to switch gears and go into single elimination mode. I think already you're seeing Bruce being able to rotate the roster, give these guys a little bit of a rest, bring them on for the second half. And so having this sort of behind them where they'll celebrate the Shield this coming week and getting that done and dusted, going to the international break, and then sort of starting almost a new season heading towards the playoffs, that's going to be a nice break, I think, for the Revs.
Congratulations to them. Supporter Shield is theirs. I believe it is on the way to Foxborough. Beautiful Foxborough. Destination Foxborough. Right. The sort of place that you dream about when you have, you know, you have an airplane voucher and you're like, where am I going? I could go anywhere in the world. If you're Kalen Carr, you're going straight to Foxborough. Before we get to Sounders Sporting Kansas City, which was the big one out west, and of course the emotionally charged one this weekend. Philly with a 1-0 win against Nashville. You mentioned, Doyle, how are they not being talked about as MLS Cup contenders? Got it on a PK, Shabilko finishing that one off, but Nashville still just it seems like a common refrain from Gary Smith right now is just, we didn't have somebody to apply the final pass, touch, whatever it might be in the final third. It just wasn't there, and no Hani Mukhtar for them in this one.
Yeah, six without a win, only three goals in that six-game stretch. We talked about this earlier in the year, right? Their schedule was front-loaded with home games. I think 12 of their first 17 games were at home, and it's been a slog on the back half of the schedule. So, I don't know. Performances like this kind of make sense. That said, no Mukhtar. He was out with red card suspension, but like CJ Sapong didn't start. Walker Zimmerman didn't start. Dax McCarty was rested. Daniel Lovitz, I think, has a little knock, so he didn't start as well. So, like, this squad got rotated a lot. And I thought that was a weird decision, because if you look at the standings implications, if Nashville had been able to scratch out a scoreless draw, which is kind of their specialty this year, they would still be in second place. They would still have, you know, a couple of points on the Union. So I thought it was a curious decision. That said, they're in a good spot, and it's just a matter of finding the right attacking mix come the playoffs. I still think they're best in sort of a 3-5-2 with Mukhtar as a second forward and Leal underneath them as a number 10. But like it's a concern because the attack has dried up. And part of that is CJ has been their best striker this year. He's been better than Jandre Cadiz. Ake Loba has not provided anything. He got the start in this game and was poor. You know, I like Danny Rios a lot, but he's clearly not top three on the depth chart even for Gary Smith. So it's been CJ, and CJ's really great at a lot of things, but he's a really streaky goal scorer. And if he doesn't get hot, then that kind of lowers Nashville's ceiling overall. That said, like, they can pitch some shutouts, man. They have a really good defense. They have in Godoy and Dak, so they have two deep-lying central midfielders who really know how to move the ball around into good spots, maybe win some free kicks. They could 1-0 their way through the playoffs just on set-piece goals and shutouts, man. Like, they totally have the capacity to do that. But the margin for error when you're trying to do that is pretty slim.
Here's the thing about this game for Nashville. I understand why Gary Smith, with Hani out, I think it was yellow card suspension. Did he get a red? I can't remember right now.
I think it was a red.
I understand why you would sort of punt on it a little bit. You are going to have to get through Philly in the playoffs if you both advance. You're going to be on the same side of the bracket. That's just going to be the way it is because the Revs have it locked down in the other one, and I doubt either of those two teams, although Orlando could make a run here, and in two games, you know, Nashville go to Orlando. But I would have, if I was Gary Smith, I would have saved my big guns for this week, Wednesday, away at Cincinnati, because you say we have to take 3 points there. That has to be 3 points for us. Maybe we'll grind out a draw on this one against Philly. Then you're away at Orlando. Again, that's going to be a game to decide which side of the bracket you're on. Are you a 4 seed at home? And then you're going to take on the Revs in the next one if you win, or are you going to be on the other side and get to avoid the Revs as long as possible? Then you're home against the Red Bulls. I think I would have held back a little bit too. So it's not a disaster at all. For Philly, it's just a good win. They said it. If we are, after Club America, if we're this team, we're going to win most of our games, and we're going to climb the standings. So all the sort of woe is me is gone at this point for the Union on 49 points. Nashville on 49 points as well. Nashville have a better goal differential, but because of all their draws, they have fewer wins. Wins are the first tiebreaker. So there's some interesting stuff going to go on there the rest of the season.
The Union have gone 5-1-2 since that loss in the second leg to Club America, since they were eliminated in the CCL, and we've seen what happens to teams over the past five years who make a run that deep in the CCL. They come back to MLS and they kind of fall right on their faces. So, like, credit to those players and the culture that Jim Curtin and Ernst Tanner and everybody has built for the Union, because it's like we stopped talking about it months ago, but like, they lost two best 11 players this past off season. They lost their starting right back, their, you know, most capped player ever. The one big import, the one big signing they made, Daniel Gazdag, has not really delivered. And in spite of all that, here the Union are in second place in the Eastern Conference and a legit MLS Cup threat. Maybe the most legit threat in the East aside from the Revs. They deserve a ton of credit.
Let's hit the Western Conference. It's been, what, half an hour here? Sounders fans probably losing their minds. Sounders lose 2-1 at home, shorthanded Sporting Kansas City. No Shallowy. He was a late scratch for Kansas City in this one. Obviously, no Alan Pulido, but no Ladero, no Morris. We know that. No Rui Diaz for the Sounders. I'll address and we'll just leave it at that, sort of the elephant in the room here. I mean, Tim Melia should have clearly got a red card for slamming Christian Roldan. He got a yellow card. It's mind-boggling to me that would be the result of this when we have video review. I can't see it. I can't understand it. I think in any universe but the one we live in, that's an immediate red card, either live or on review. It is obviously violent conduct.
Yeah.
Just obvious. Like, the clear and obvious threshold, just check, 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 check. If you go check out the law on this for violent conduct, it's excessive force or brutality. It does not have to be brutality. I know the pool reporter process, the referees, and Ismael Elfath was the referee, and Rubio Vasquez was the VAR on this one, said that they did not see brutality in this play. Well, I would disagree with that, first off, because Tim Melia literally lifts Christian Roldan off the ground in a non-soccer play and slams him. That is brutality, in my opinion. And at the bare minimum, it's excessive force.
Yeah.
I expect that this will go to Disco. The Disco is set up to handle things like this. I expect it will go to Disco and a disciplinary committee, if people aren't up on the lingo here. If you listen to the show, I assume you are. And that Melia will be suspended, either for one or two games, whatever it is. I think they have the power to do two and usually do one in these situations. This is just, it's just violent conduct. It doesn't matter what Christian Roldan was doing, that he obstructed, that the foul happened, whatever. This is not a soccer play. It doesn't belong in the game. Thankfully, Christian Roldan is not hurt, but he wasn't hurt from the start. Like,
did you used to suplex Joel like that growing up? Come on, you're the older brother. I'm a little brother, so I was on the wrong end of a few of those.
Of course. Yeah, but he was asking for it. Joel Wiebe was. Joel Wiebe, not Christian Roldan. Was asking for it. And look, you know, there's a lot that went on after this one. You know, The Rock tweeted about it. He thought it was a red card, too, so we know he has a pretty good... if The Rock is saying it's a red card, and I don't know what his soccer bona fides are, but if The Rock is saying it, and he's just sort of a layman in this situation, I think we can all agree that, that's a red card.
You know who was saying it a lot? Anders was saying it a lot.
Anders. When you said address the elephant in the room, I thought you were talking about Anders. I was like, yeah. This is going to be a whole weekend, the last couple of days.
He lost his damn mind, guys.
Up. Yeah.
I had a number of people lost their minds. Sounders fans, you know, did I bait the hook a little bit on you? I did. I'll admit that. There's some things out there that I'm not the proudest of. But boy, look at my mentions and look in the mirror a little bit yourselves. I'm just saying, none of us are perfect in this situation.
Interesting choice of shirt today, Wiebe. I'm noticing now. Is that it's just
I always wear the MLS.
Okay. MLS.
See, the Jimi Hendrix is dirty.
Okay.
It's one of my favorite jerseys. I would normally wear it on a day like this, but I don't want I didn't want perception to go the wrong way on this one. So we've acknowledged it. Everybody knew it was a red card, folks. We all knew it was a red card. Nobody would have joked. Nobody would have said anything if Christian Roldan was hurt. He was not. But it did affect the game, Doyle. It absolutely affected the game. I think so. That would have been a red card. It would have been 10 versus 11.
So maybe...
Sporting Kansas City up 1-0 at the time. They end up winning 2-1. It definitely affected the game. But also...
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, also Kansas City stringing together 38 passes and cutting their way through the Sounders' defense affected the game, and Seattle not getting it done and not coming out in the first 15 minutes in the right way affected the game.
Yeah, I mean, there are bad calls in just about every game all over the world. This was one of them, and I think that Brian Schmetzer and Roldan and everybody else on the Sounders who talked afterwards kind of struck the right chord, which is that, like, we didn't lose because of the call. We lost because we came out flat for the first half hour. And then in the second half, they only gave up one shot. The Sounders were really good in the second half. They only gave up one shot, but that one shot came at the end of a 2-plus-minute, 38-pass sequence, which produced one of the best team goals I have ever seen in MLS, ever. This goal from the Sounders, or from Sporting KC, rather, you know, with just the patient possession, the willingness to build back and then flow forward, orchestrated and precise off the ball work, and then an inch perfect through ball from Roger Espinosa to Johnny Russell, and of course the finish from Johnny Russell, is a work of art. It was a work of art. It's one of those goals that's like, this is why we watched the game. It was beautiful. And credit to Sporting Kansas City for being able to orchestrate a team movement like that without their, two of their three best attacking players, or probably their top two attacking players this year in Pulido and Shalloy. For the Sounders, they did a good job of recognizing after 25 minutes that, you know, when a 4-3-3 team who plays true wide wingers, which is what Sporting KC does, when a 4-3-3 team plays a 3-5-2 or a 3-4-2-1 team, the wingers can end up pinning the 3-4-2-1's wingbacks back. So it turns into a 5-4-1. And when that happens, you end up creating midfield overloads for the 4-3-3 team. They just end up having more numbers along the around the ball because the team with five in the back is just like you're getting nothing except just like static flat backline stuff. And that was the story of the first 25 minutes. And around 25 minutes, I think Roldan and then especially Jimmy Madranda on the other side started taking being a little bit more risky with their positioning, and that changed the game. Oh, let's say maybe the half hour mark, and from minute 30 to 80, like that was a story. Like they were really really good at getting those wing backs on the front foot. I thought the wide center backs were doing a good job of stepping out wider and providing support so that the wing backs didn't get flattened out, and it ended up being like I thought a really insanely great tactical battle between the two best teams in the Western Conference, no disrespect to the Rapids. And the difference was Sporting had one more match winner on the field than Seattle did. Like, Seattle have been so good all year, but like I think the cumulative stress of playing without Ladero, without Morris, and now without Rolleri Diaz, like, it's just too much. And they would have beaten a lot of other teams, maybe every other team in the West, with this performance. But against Sporting Kansas City, you need to find that extra gear. And the Sounders, without their three best attacking players, don't have that gear right now.
And Roldan tried to be that guy.
By the way, 6 goals in 7 matches, last 7 against the Sounders.
Last 7, yeah. I think he's got 7.
Yeah, so it's no surprise that he's the one that popped up there. And if this Johnny Russell is the one that's around come playoff time for Sporting, I'm not saying they're going to be able to do it without Pulido or Shallowy, but they're a different team when Johnny Russell is this guy as opposed to the guy that he was when he had kind of a slow start to the season. Sorry.
No, Caleb, when he's flowing, he's you know, one of the best wingers in the league. And I think we've always said that. It's just it's been kind of streaky generally and sometimes and timed well with the playoffs. But right now to see him in this type of form heading towards the playoffs is a scary sight. And then if you start to think, okay, Shallowy comes back and you get that sort of duality of both sides. And then if you can get, like all of your pieces back as well, and you get your number 9 back, that's going to be huge as well. So, the pass though, going back to just that, the way they created that, the little pass from Espinoza, or it wasn't so much of a little pass, but it was actually his little jab move, the way he sets it up. Just amazing movement there in the back where he kind of drags Atencio back and then just turns and gets that little slip ball through and then still has a lot of room to go from there. But for Sporting Kansas City, I think I was curious whether they would be able to go on the road in a match like this to be able to withstand, because Seattle, even without their best players, we've seen throughout this year, they can overwhelm you and they can pile on chance after chance, dangerous on set piece always. And they've been able to trust players even without Rui Diaz. I think they've still been able to find results. And so I think for Sporting Kansas City, this city that we talked about as far as the psychological battle closer to the playoffs and just kind of what that can mean for a team and how New England didn't want to let Orlando City get any joy. I think for Sporting, this will give them a ton, because this is a team that I think for a lot of times, whether it's, you know, on our show or others, you're sort of questioning, well, strength of schedule, they were top of the West, but did they play everybody? Or was that more of the case of other teams not doing as well? I think when you go and you beat Seattle, regardless of the refereeing decisions, whatever it might be, like, you got to give it up for them. You got to give some respect. So Johnny Russell right now, match winner. We've seen what Shallowy's done all season. I feel like this team could go deep in the playoffs, potentially go to MLS Cup. And I personally took a lot out of this win for them.
Seattle had a ton of chances too, by the way. Roldan smacked the crossbar. Sure. Late on, like, they could have won this game. There's two big ones coming up midweek here. LAFC hosts Seattle on Tuesday. It's the only game on Tuesday. Then we have a full slate on Wednesday. It's on ESPN at 10:30 Eastern. And then Kansas City hosts the Galaxy 8:30 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday at Children's Mercy Park on FS1. So two big games coming up midweek here. This was big in the standings as well, because it sort of seemed like Seattle was just going to coast away with that top spot in the Western Conference, with the bye, with home field advantage all the way to MLS Cup, should they get there, etc. But now Kansas City have a game in hand. That game in hand will not actually come into play until not this midweek, but the next midweek. that's when that game will occur, when they'll sort of get on even footing ahead of decision day. And remember, we're going to have the decision day live show. We're going to be here for 5 hours taking through all of that, so we'll see how it all ends up. But right now, Kansas City, 55 points after this win through 30 games. Seattle on 58 points. If Kansas City, with that game in hand, again, can get a win, or they can somehow pip the Sounders and wins over the course of the season, the tiebreakers are pretty close because Seattle have just one extra win and they have just three extra goals on goal differential, but they actually don't have as many goals scored. So it's going to be, again, that's a three-goal margin there as well. It's going to be really, really, really close down the way. But what the shame is here for me, though this was a really good game, is that we just haven't seen either team all season long in their three meetings anywhere close to full strength.
Yeah.
It's a shame, man, because even without being full strength, and we know Kansas City has been missing Alan Pulido for a long, long stretches. We know, talked about ad nauseum what Seattle's been missing. What are the odds we see them full strength in the playoffs? And like, how much does that affect, Doyle, how we think about these two teams and their MLS Cup aspirations? Because I think Raul Ruidíaz is still in Peru. Alan Pulido is recovering from surgery. Peter Vermes says it's going well, but again, three words, recovering from surgery at this time of year. That's not what you want to hear. We might see Nico Lodero. Seems like he's slowly progressing. We will probably see Jordan Morris, but we haven't yet. So that's still sort of a mystery. I don't know. Like, how does that affect the way you perceive their MLS Cup chances?
I mean, it makes them more vulnerable. I think that if these two teams were completely fit, then we would be talking about them at the same level as the Revs. The Revs have had really, really good luck with injuries throughout this season. I think the only significant player they had who missed significant time due to injury was Heal. And it says a lot about the Revs that they were able to, you know, to cope without him. But like, that's the difference between a 70-point season and, you know, a commanding, you know, shield win and a 58 or 60-point season. And like, okay, you know, if they get healthy in the playoffs, they could maybe win MLS Cup. But if they get healthy in the playoffs, these teams can very easily win MLS Cup. I think I would give the slight edge to the Sounders just because of know-how in terms of getting there and because I like their defense a little bit better than Sporting KC. Like, I'm not going to believe it with Sporting KC until I see them do it in playoff games. Because remember, this team played two playoff games last year. They gave up six goals. So I would, you know, if they're both healthy, I give the edge to Seattle out of these two. But like, it's a massive if. And if they're not healthy, then like, look, who's going to score goals for the Sounders if it's not if Raul Ruidíaz is not there? Like, Will Bruin's good, but he's not, you know, in 2021, he's not lead the front line to an MLS Cup appearance good. They need to get their guys right, you know, and that has to be the main focus for both teams over the next month.
Can we give some props to the Rapids? They're the only team this week to put that X next to their name. Knocked off Portland. I mentioned earlier, Portland have lost three straight. They had that run where it seemed like crescendo, 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 and it's tapered off significantly here. Let's just shout out Dom Baji as one of the most under-the-radar trades of sort of like mid-season period. Everybody's like, oh, Dom Baji back to the Rapids. That's one of those that kind of gets buried at MLSsoccer.com. It's a, you know, that headline that gets pushed down the news stack pretty quick. But here he is. He belongs in Colorado. That's where he needs to be. That's where he's getting the double digits, Doyle. But the Rapids, I mean, they had a little bit of a lull here. But 55 points through 31 games, putting the X next to their name. It's just been a progression over the last 3 years that you have to respect. The way that they've done it, the hole that they dug themselves out of to get there, that I think would sink most other teams. I mean, that was like an FC Cincinnati-esque hole.
Yeah.
I cannot believe you wouldn't come to me on Baji. It's offensive.
Both of your Baji credibles are right there.
Go ahead, Doyle.
No, first of all, that goal from Dom Baji, which, like, we talked about Books's as a towering header. Like, my God, nobody was getting up there with Dom Baji on this one. But it does, Weeby, you're absolutely correct. It does speak to the overall team-building philosophy that has taken hold in Colorado over the past three seasons. Because, like, the cross came from Brian Galvan, who has been really, really good, like, so much better than many of the much more expensive and more hyped young South Americans who have come into this league. Galvan has been such a good two-way player, whether he's playing a wing back or winger or sometimes just regular midfield spot on one side. And, you know, Baji is, you know, I jokingly called Colorado distressed assets FC a couple of years back. And like, they're still that team, man. They're still out there shopping for bargains within the league. And Baji is that guy. And he's got three goals in 220 minutes for them now. And he deserves a ton of credit. I think the culture there obviously has a lot to do with it. And like, Robin Fraser is at the center of that. Cause like, he just does not push the wrong button in terms of like, which teams are getting the absolute most out of their talent. It's the Revs in Colorado. And like, that's coaching. And on top of it, with Colorado, the young players are getting better. And that's coaching.
I was just going to say that.
And that's like, you know, Robin Fraser in any other year would be one of the first names in the coach of the year discussion.
Gerhard Struber was a name that was under pressure. Big pressure just a little while ago. Looked like the Revs were going to break their playoff streak. Excuse me, the Revs. The Red Bulls were going to break their playoff streak. I mean, it looked like the team, I'm not going to say the team, just they looked completely disjointed. Well, that's not the case anymore. They're the hottest team in the league. It took us 50 minutes to get to them. Sean Nealis, stand up, my guy. What a goal from Sean Nealis. And forget the goals. He's been one of the best defenders in the league for a little while now. The Red Bulls are the hottest team in MLS. The sky is not falling anymore. I think they're going to make the playoffs. I probably just jinxed them in saying that. But they're up to sixth. Montreal seemed to be fading a little bit. DC, of course, got just absolutely shellacked, and we'll touch on that one in a second. But the Red Bulls, over the course of the last, I don't know, month and a half, 2 months, they just turned it on.
Nealis is a good name to bring up because at times he seemed to struggle earlier on in the year, and the Red Bulls' back line in general did not seem settled. Because if you look back at the last... Let's see, the Red Bull time, they've scored more than one goal in 7 matches. But a lot of those have been 1-0 wins. And so they've been able to, as we saw versus New York City, get out to an early lead, have good starts to games. And from there, they have not conceded. So I think the biggest thing, the biggest shift for me with this Red Bull team has been in the back line, being able to not give away easy goals or a ton of chances. And then when they've gotten their opportunities, they've taken them. It's Caceres is now, I think, a couple games in a row. It's been set pieces. It's been, you know, different opportunities off, you know, knock whatever it might be. They've been able to scrap enough to get goals. But teams that go into the playoffs going, you know, if they do get in, being able to win 1-0 home and away, that's a pretty good recipe. So, it looked like they were gone. It looked like it looked like this Red Bull team was not going to make it the playoff. And they've like turned it around in the last month or so at the right time.
What I mean, it looked like that to the fans too, right? Like Viking Army,
they were
unfurled a banner, put out a statement on their Twitter. Like most of the other fan groups there, I think sort of echoed. And this was a month ago. The strings that Struber have pulled, like he spent most of the season playing a two forward setup. And even in this game where he had Klimala and Fabio back, Fabio actually plays deeper in central midfield now, or kind of as a trequartista. So it's either been a 3-4-2-1, which is what they started this game in, or a 4-2-3-1. And I think that it's just made it more difficult for teams to use their fullbacks and their width to get past that first line of Red Bull pressure. And so because the press has been more effective, the Red Bulls have been able to dominate where on the field the game has been played. And that is the whole purpose of the press. You don't want Columbus to get comfortable knocking the ball around through midfield. You don't want the other team to set up shop in your defensive third. You want to have them constantly on the back foot, scrambling in their own defensive third. And if you create that many dice rolls, that many 50-50s, eventually you'll hit on two or three in a row, and that's a big chance. And, you know, they haven't been finishing their big chances, but, like, they had a bunch of them in this game. They could have had three or four goals. And, you know, I thought the Crew center backs scrambled pretty well for the most part. Eloy Room had a couple of big saves. But, like, in the second half especially, the Red Bulls were in complete control of this game. And it was just an utterly dominant performance.
Speaking of NYCFC, at home, you mentioned banners. There was a banner out there for all manner of NYCFC folks to be quote-unquote out. And after the game, Tati Castellanos came around as they were celebrating a 6-0 win, the worst ever loss in DC history. A huge win for New York City, because what they've had, I don't think that's more goals than they've scored in months, it feels like. And said, hey, put that sign away. NYCFC back above the playoff line and still a little bit nervous because Montreal on 43 is just a point back under the line. But 6-0, Kalen? I mean, this thing was over in 10 minutes. It was like, snap your fingers, it was done.
And DC played a big part of that. You can give New York City a lot of credit for taking the opportunities, and I think seeing them back at Yankee Stadium was good. I think it shows where at Yankee Stadium, those same opportunities don't always exist everywhere else, where a slip, suddenly you're in on goal. Or a misclearance, you're right there. And that was a lot of this story for DC as well, where they were their own worst enemy. Just not clearing balls, simple mistakes. They just looked like, give NYC credit, because once it's turned one way, it just went all the way. And I think they needed a win like this, because it seemed like they were teetering for sure. And Tati, we know how he can kind of fluctuate based on his confidence, but he took his chance as well. Maxi gets in on the action. We haven't seen that in a while. Those sort of trademark late runs where we see him kind of winning balls in the box or things falling to him. So it was sort of a vintage NYCFC performance that they needed bad. And for DC, you have to just throw this out the window. There's no film study this week. There's no looking back on that. You just completely forget that it ever happened and you move on to the next one.
DC now on 41 points, 2 points back in the playoff race, down in ninth. Can they recover, Doyle? Or is this just sort of like they've expended all the energy that they had, and Hernan Losada asks them to expend a lot? No wins in four games now.
Yeah, they look completely wiped out to me. And it's not just the guys who are playing. They were without seven guys due to injury in this one. Losada said afterwards that it's likely that most of them won't be able to play this week against the Red Bulls. And if DC doesn't take all 3 points from that game, there's a mathematical path for them to get over the playoff line. I don't think there's a plausible path. If anything but a win against the Red Bulls here, and I think DC season is over. And it's unfortunate for them that that these injuries have sort of derailed what was a wonderful sort of bounce back season. But at the same time, DC United seems every year at the end of the season, we're talking about the just huge amount of injuries that they have. And with Losada in particular, it came out from day one that he was maybe overworking guys. So he's a young coach. I think he got great ideas in terms of how he wants his team to play the game, and players clearly buy in. But maybe for 2022, and we're not writing the epitaph yet, because they very well could beat the Red Bulls. It's a home game for DC on Wednesday, and this is, I think, his biggest game on Wednesday.
And they're very good at home. They are arguably the best team in the East at home. 10-4-1. Only the Revs are better at home.
So they could take the 3 points here, and if that's the case, they'll be back above the playoff line. But regardless, or irrespective of what happens in this game and down the stretch, one of the things that I think Losada probably has to get better at is understanding workload and maybe rotating these guys a little bit so they don't suffer through so many soft tissue injuries down the final couple months of the season.
And there's been a lot of turnover in DC, as reported on sort of the medical staff side. But it is bookended this year by a lot of injuries. Not just a lot, like debilitating, we can't field nearly the squad that we would want to field sort of injuries on both ends of the year. And look, when you lose to Orlando, you draw against Nashville, you lose to the Revs, you lose to NYCFC, boom, 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 boom. in sort of the crunch time of the season, all sort of playoff teams, quote unquote, peers with you of where you're trying to go. It says something. Three games left. We'll see what DC can do. Let's hit our celebrating soccer moment of the weekend presented by Continental Tire. Canadian Classique. Doesn't matter that Toronto FC is out, baby. It's always awesome. It's always petty. There's always something to play for. Just ask Jonathan Osorio, who was questioned about why the why Club de Foot, well, sorry, they don't want to be called Club de Foot, why CF Montreal seem to be so much more together than Toronto FC this season.
You opened that door for me. That's a team that plays together. Is that something that explains the season that you guys had?
No, it's okay, because at the end of the day, Toronto FC, you know, we've had one bad season, but we still have MLS Cup and Montreal does not. Thank you.
The runaway, the glance back at the camera. The moment he saw TVA Sports on that microphone, he chose violence. He was just like, I'm coming for you. And now, look, they have had more than one bad season. Toronto FC fans know that. Jonathan Soria has been involved with more than one bad season with the Revs.
Wait, he chose violence?
But that was a perfect...
I think she chose violence. She said, you opened the door for me.
They both chose it.
And she came out and he was like, oh, no. I don't think he wanted to be in that situation, but you could feel the emotion where he's like, that's cool. We got a trophy. Montreal does not.
I mean, the nice thing, too, is that they could miss in the they could meet again in the Canadian Championship this year.
Yeah.
So there is more to come in this one. It's not this Wednesday, but the next that you have those semifinals. And if they both get through, well, we get that again, and I cannot wait. This game looked like it was going to be a Montreal win until Josie Altidore stepped over a free kick, whipped it around the wall, and James Panthimus has got a, you know, it's one of a couple tough goalkeeping moments over the weekend. It's not as bad as the Tyler Miller one. It's certainly not as bad as Bill Hamid running out of his goal and whiffing on a clearance that Tati Castellanos just immediately deposited in the back of the net. But it was a rough moment for Montreal, and they've had a few of those lately. Josie Altidore afterward, quote, it feels a little bit sweeter when you slow down Montreal. That never gets old. This was arguably the worst result of the weekend when it comes to sort of outside of probably D.C. and just like the scale of what it meant for playoff chances. Montreal dropped below the line, Doyle. 43 points.
So they're below the line. They're in eighth place. So they're even on points, but on tiebreakers, they're in eighth place. They play at the Red Bulls next Saturday. Then they finish with two home games. They have Houston and Orlando City to finish out the season. So they're like, this one hurt. It hurt bad. If they had picked up two more points in this one, you would say, yeah, Montreal are strong favorites to get in. I still kind of like what I'm looking at for them, though, because the Red Bulls are playing a three-game week, right? They're going to, they just emptied the tank in Columbus. Now they're going Wednesday to empty the tank in D.C., and then they'll have their third home game, their third game in a week coming back home to face this Montreal team that's getting the week off. So it is still there for Montreal if they play well, but they did not play well in this game against Toronto, and it's understandable. It's the second, you know, their second road game in a row. It's a Montreal, or it's a Toronto team that got Pozuelo and Josie back for the second half of this game, and once those two guys were on, Montreal just couldn't really compete. At the same time, look, Montreal are missing their two best forwards in Mason Toy and Romel Kyoto. They're not a super talented team in the first place, so the margins are very, very thin. And you like James, I feel bad for James Pantemis because I thought he played really, really well in this game, and then he made one, like he left the door open with the positioning of the wall on that free kick and got punished in like the most brutal way. On the flip side for Toronto, I know their season's over. I just want to point out Josie looked to be like 10 or 15 pounds lighter than he was earlier in the season. This is the fittest I think I've seen him since like 2018, maybe. And he was monstrous out there. Once he got on the field, and like he deserved a goal. Like it was weird that it came from a set piece because he was so dangerous from the open play. But like this is when Josie is as engaged as he was in this performance, like, oh, like you understand completely why he's got that DP contract and why he has been, just in terms of per minute, one of the best attacking players in MLS history in the playoffs.
Is this the end for Josie in Toronto? Like, we had basically assumed that.
Yeah, we did.
Like, does it just have to be?
I mean, I say we shelve that for a discussion after the season, because there are bigger issues in MLS right now. But like, if like he certainly did not look washed in this appearance.
TBD. We shall see. LAFC Minnesota split the points. Ozzie Alonso and Bob Bradley beefed a little bit at the final whistle. That's yeah, you know, I'm gonna say that's a little bit that's somewhat predictable. Those two on opposite sides having something to say to each other and disagreeing about whatever it is they disagree. I'm not shocked that they would find a reason to have a little bit of conflict in that moment. Both these teams fighting for the playoffs. With the draw, Minnesota do stay above the line. Real Salt Lake wasted an opportunity in Chicago. They're at 42 points. They do have a game in hand on LA, Minnesota, and Vancouver above them. 46, 45, and 44 points for them. 42 for Real Salt Lake. And LAFC is still somehow hanging on. 41 points down there. 31 games played. But hey, it could happen. It could happen. Vancouver, Minnesota, midweek. 10 p.m. Eastern, MLS Live on ESPN+. Plus. That's a huge match out in the West as they jockey for playoff position. Let's go to the Galaxy as well. I mean, we have an email here, R. Pout in Canada. Now that all the Texas teams are eliminated from the playoffs, surely nothing would be more delightful than the Galaxy dropping to join LAFC and San Jose below the line to make for a perfect Texicali sweep of failure in the Western Conference, sort of like the Mad Magazine version of Texicali sweep of failure that is the Congress. That reference I don't get, even though I did read Mad Magazine back in the day. He ended with Andiamo, which I'm always down for. Sartini for life. Galaxy 2-2 against FC Dallas. LAFC 1-1. How do you think this is going to end up in the Western Conference?
The Galaxy have a
try to handicap this a little
tough
bit.
Stretch. They play away at Sporting Kansas City, away at Seattle, and then play at home against Minnesota. So that's not an easy stretch there. So this one was big for them to, because they had to claw their way back into this match from 2-0 down. And you know, that's kind of been the story for the Galaxy. It's been kind of this inconsistent, and then, you know, can they get goals through Chicharito when it comes down to it? And, you know, my question for them has been a little bit, even as the way they sort of line up their team a little bit, is they have to, in order to get the best out of the attack, it becomes difficult because that it disbalances the team defensively as well. And I think some of the questions we were rightly asked about the back line throughout the season to say that this team struggles in the back. But I think some of that comes as well with Vanny understanding that in order to get this attack going, he's got to make some decisions to play more attacking pieces so they have a better understanding of how they play. And, you know, that's Victor Vasquez. That's some guys like that that are top players, but maybe not defensively. And I think that's a question mark for the Galaxy. I think they're going to get in the playoffs. I think they're going to hold on to the spot. They need to try and play a little bit more, probably these next two matches especially, be a little bit more pragmatic and try and take whatever chance they get. Because if they try and play open on the road against either of these two teams, I think they're going to be in trouble.
Yeah. Co-sign everything Caitlin just said.
Real Salt Lake, by the way, this was an opportunity for them, and 30,000 plus in Chicago saw a win. That was a big night for the Fire. Real Salt Lake are away at Dallas midweek, then they're home against San Jose, then they're home against the Portland Timbers, and then they're away against Sporting Kansas City to end the season. That's not easy for them as well. The Western Conference going to be a little bit interesting down the stretch. A ton to play for. Austin beat Houston, though. That doesn't matter in the standings. But Copa Tejas is still in play. Austin in Dallas on Wednesday. So that's a big one to see who would take that inaugural trophy, the best of the worst in Texas, as I'm thinking about it right now. Some other news before we hit the mailbag real quick and get out of here. Ted Siegel has ambition for the Dynamo. Tom Boger reporting that Dennis Teclosa, of course, who's with the Galaxy now, and Pat Onset, who's with the Crew, are up for that Houston GM job. So that'll be interesting. We'll talk about that more whenever something actually happens. On that front, let's hit the mailbag, 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Derek Richards, we had this a lot, and we maybe can just slap this one down as well. Is it time for MLS Cup to be a home-and-home series with the team with the better record hosting the second leg as the league expands and cross-conference games continue to be reduced? We had a lot of people saying it needs to be a neutral site. This is mostly, I would say, Sounders fans who aren't happy about what they would think is a east-west split in quality. Absolutely not. People have somehow forgotten Toronto from 2009. It is by far better to play it.
That was 2010. Yeah.
Was it 2010?
Yeah.
Oh, either way. Yeah, either way. It's by far better to play this in a city and at a stadium of a team involved. Just look at the atmospheres. Just look at the event. Just look at the way that these cities sort of rally around it and the way that it pierces through something bigger. There's no need to change this. You have to reward regular season excellence. I understand that the schedule is imbalanced. Just win the games in front of you. It's going to be cyclical. Some years the East will be up. Some years the West will be up. And every year we'll argue about it.
Weeby, can I disagree here? I would like a second leg of MLS Cup. I'd like to go back. If we could still go back to Houston, I want, just from my personal experience.
Oh, fair. Okay. Yeah, right.
Let's run it back, guys. Let's run it back.
You're not a neutral party. You're not an unbiased observer.
Yeah, no, that's a bad idea.
The playoffs, so a couple years ago when they went to single elimination throughout the playoffs, has produced the best soccer I've ever seen in MLS, the most dramatic soccer in MLS history. And I think that carries over to MLS Cup as well. MLS Cup is just so much better as a single leg at the home of the higher seed. And it's an appropriate reward for the team that had the better season. You know, if the Revs make it, they deserve to, like, in addition to the supporter shield, the Revs deserve to have that game played on their home field. So, no to the idea of two legs in MLS Cup or the playoffs again. We already tried that. It wasn't as good as what we have now.
Yeah, look, the other thing is the Revs aren't guaranteed to get the MLS Cup. So, that's where you need this reward for teams. You need a carrot. A regular season carrot. Everything that makes the regular season matter more is a good thing. Oftentimes, if the one seed hasn't got there, there's a ton of examples of this. So if you're the two seed, the three seed, the four seed, whatever it is, you want to have the better record. You could get that reward. You could host a once-in-a-lifetime game at your stadium to win the biggest prize in Major League Soccer. Like, it needs to stay this way. It has to stay this way. We're not changing it. I guess I don't have any power to decide that.
Yeah, but just to finish off my own trauma, we didn't host MLS Cup 2012 because the Galaxy, as we were both, I think, the five seeds, and the Galaxy were 1 point above us, and we rested players on decision day. So there you go.
Rough one for there. The Dummy Run podcast hit us up, says, Emmanuel Reynoso has 14 nutmegs so far this year, four more than the next closest player, which is Samuel Grandsir. No question. Just thought that was neat. Also, a bunch of people hitting us up.
Kaku would have 14 in a month.
He's a Megmaster. Yeah. Uh-huh. He went for it. Got to respect those guys. Bunch of Minnesota folks saying that we really glossed over Franco Fragapane for newcomer of the year. 4 goals, 9 assists in 16 games.
No. He's been very good, but it's Christian Arango, right?
Yes.
Or Ryan Gauld otherwise. But I think Fragapane is a finalist to me.
So
he's a finalist.
It would be Gauld, Arango. Like, I understand, like, Fragapane has been good, but, like, Gauld has been transformative for a team that, you know, is right there with, they, like, the Caps were nothing, and then Gauld got there, and now they've been one of the best attacking teams in the league, and they might make the playoffs. Arango has 12 goals in 1,100 minutes.
Now, 5 of those are PKs. That's fine. A lot of people yelling that at us.
You know, he drew 3 of those, you know, and he has kept LAFC alive. I think it's got to be Arango. But
this is, I think the more interesting point on this is that all the players we're talking about predominantly are mid-season signings. Tells you something about that winter signing window and how the pandemic affected it, but also the players that came in and whether
I picked Thomas Pochettino as newcomer of the year, and like, he's not even a starting caliber player. If you had to go with guys from the winter window, it might be Jonathan Bond. But like, there's no, the summer window was a lot better for MLS teams than the winter window was.
R.I.P. Pato. I think almost.
I had Brenner. Yeah.
Yeah, it could have been. What could have been? Mark Fishkin hit us up here. What's the one Eastern Conference team, other than the Revs, of course, that no one wants to face in the playoffs?
I would think it would be Philly, right?
Yeah, that's what comes to mind for me as well.
I'm reading the question as, which is the team the Revs don't want to play? And to me, that's Nashville. If you look even back at their regular season record, I think Nashville has two wins and two draws.
Yeah.
So of the teams that match up well with the Revs, I think Nashville is one of those that is going to be a little bit of a problem for them, because they're, you know, for all the talk as far as them not being able to go out on the road and get results or get wins earlier on the season, I think they've proven they've been able to do that in the back half a little bit more. And if they're healthy, they can hurt this team in a number of different ways, where they get right into that little soft spot, right in behind, in between the lines, and you get Hany Mukhtar going, and then Sapong. But I think, you know, the one that we talked about, you sort of brought it up earlier as I think you mentioned Minnesota as a team that has just kind of like the one unique special player that changes things. And Hany Mukhtar is that guy for me with Nashville, where I do think Nashville, it's no disrespect to the rest of the team. I think they're solid, you know, super reliable and have some depth in a lot of different spots. But Hany Mukhtar is the one that supercharges the team and really changes. And even in the game where you see, he's just, when you win the ball and you can just find him in pieces, and then things start from there. But I think for the Revs, the one team that you don't want to play right now, I think based on the matchup, even the numbers sort of back that up, is Nashville in the East.
And I will go a little bit further with that and say, if you can solve the Revs through midfield, you can actually kind of pin them back a little bit. And one of the things that Nashville has in Dax McCarty and Anibal Godoy are two very experienced, exceptional passers sitting in deep lying midfield who can solve a lot of problems for you and can make sure that guys like Mukhtar or Lovitz on the overlap on one side, or, you know, CJ Sapong, are getting the ball in good spots. So I think I still say the Union, because they made it to the CCL semifinals. They outplayed Club America, which there's not a lot of teams in the region can do. In that second leg, I should say, in the first leg, Club America outplayed them. So I still think it's the Union by a hair, but there is a really good case for Nashville, who's a better team than a lot of people seem to want to realize.
Nashville only 4 losses on the season, same as the Revs. Now they only have 3 wins on the road. The one thing for the Revs is, you look at the Eastern Conference, not a lot of road warriors in the East. Only one team in the playoffs outside the Revs who are an incredible 10-3-4 on the road have more than 4 wins away from home, and that is the New York Red Bulls, which is interesting. Whereas in the Western Conference, you have the top, let's see, the top 5 teams all have 5 wins or more on the road. So, just interesting note. Last one here. Could Brian White, this is from the text line, could Brian White theoretically be next year's Golden Boot winner? He said theoretically. Or she, whoever it was.
You're a big Brian White guy,
no,
right?
I like him a lot. I think he's, you know, he's got a lot of the stuff that Jossie does in terms of just being really smart about making the right run and reading patterns. And being on his toes in the box for rebounds. Coming into the season, I would have told you that like the max I could ever see for Brian White is 15 goals, which is a really nice, like, that's very good.
That'd be pretty good. Yeah, it's really good.
You know, with Vancouver, let's say, you know, the new guy that they're bringing in, Pedro Vite, the playmaker from Ecuador, and I'm not certain at all that I pronounce his name correctly, but him, another year of development from Caicedo and Dahomey, a full year of Ryan Gauld,
Kyle
Alessandre distributing from deep. I still can't see Brian White as a 20 goal scorer in MLS, and I think you probably will need to go over that next year to be a Golden Boot winner. So I have a tough time imagining that, though the fact that we are even entertaining it and not just tossing it in the trash goes to show you how underrated Brian White was and how great an acquisition that was for the Caps.
By the way, I wouldn't trust much of what we say when it comes to the Golden Boot. I mean, you've seen the Golden Boot draft.
This would have been the year to do it if you were going to do it. This would have been 15. Will put you right in
Brian,
the line.
Brian White, he would have been a better pick in the Golden Boot draft than most of the guys that we ended up choosing. I'm just going to throw that out there. So that's it for us. 401-206-0MLS.
Did we do Young Player of the Week, Weeby? Did we remember to do that?
No, we did not. Let's just give it to Gagá Salina for the rest of the way.
There you go.
He's our body armor young player of the week for the entire of the rest of the
fourth,
year.
Fourth 17-year-old in 9 appearances. He had one of the saves of the week. I haven't seen a teenage keeper in MLS be out there consistently doing the stuff that this kid is doing. He looks like a special player, and they've said it from day one in Chicago and people around USSF as well, though he is a Polish dual national, so keep an eye on that.
Oh, all right, that's it for us. We'll see you on Thursday, everybody, breaking down the Wednesday action. Enjoy your week.